Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. My name is John Baker, and we are here today talking about planning and execution. We have three individuals in the studio today that I'm excited to talk to. Each of them are a little bit different, and I want to kind of do a round-robin introduction of each of them, get to know them a little bit better. As our listeners know, Biz Rocket Radio is an opportunity for us to chat with some of the executives and business owners here in the Atlanta area, learn from their strategies, some of the failures and successes that they've had, and hopefully be able to better ourselves along the way. And today, our first guest is Amanda Satilli, and Amanda is a partner within Satilli & Associates LLC. So welcome in.
Thank you, John.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to where you are now.
Well, I started out as a chemical engineer, and the reason that I did that was I just love to figure out how things work. And even at a molecular level, I just like to go deeper and deeper in figuring things out. And I also love problem solving. And I found that it was just a really good background for that. I worked in a plant for Kimberly-Clark for about 7 years, and what I loved about that was just the click and clack of the machinery and the fact that there was always something happening, and it was 24 hours a day, and the operators were there all the time, and you just there was never a dull moment. Eventually I left and went to Harvard Business School, and when I left there, I went to McKinsey & Company, and that was great for me because there was a lot of variety. And you'd get thrown into something every few months that you just had no idea what the industry was even about. And right. You'd have to figure it out very quickly, get up to speed, figure out how you could help them as quickly as possible. And I love that variety, and I love the uncertainty and change involved in it. So in the mid-90s, Rob and I moved to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And that was an absolutely fascinating experience. And when we got back from there, we decided to start Satilli & Associates, and that was in 1998. And since then, we've been offering advisory services to companies, usually big companies, but occasionally small. And what our interest is in helping companies to be able to see changes in the market and figure out how they can capitalize on those and progress their company performance by being able to see changes, act on them, and get themselves in a better competitive position for the future where they're providing more and more customer value.
Hmm. So it sounds like the experience that you had at McKesson.
At McKinsey.
Were you doing some of the same type of work there as you're doing here, just in a different kind of scenario?
I do. Both of them are management consulting. At McKinsey, of course, you've usually got a bigger team and you've got a lot more resources behind you in terms of research and expertise and things like that. But much the same types of work. I think that the biggest difference is that now when we consult, we rely a lot more on the internal expertise of the people who are working in the company. So many companies that we work with, every company, in fact, has so much knowledge and skills internally, but they may just not be organized to solve the particular problem that's facing them at that point. Hmm. And people have day jobs, right? And so they're worrying about what's happening. You know, the phone's ringing, a customer's got a problem, they've got to coach an employee. Just a million things are happening all the time, but there's something big that's happening in their strategic agenda that needs some focus. And right. So we help them by kind of organizing the problem. What are the issues we need to think about? How are we going to think about them? What kind of analysis needs to be done? What kind of facts can we bring to the table to make the right decision? What stakeholders need to be involved to be mm-hmm. able to, you know, people say stakeholder analysis and you worry that you're going to waste a lot of time just asking people a bunch of questions and getting them all riled up about something unnecessary. But actually, they have very legitimate concerns. And if you don't talk to those stakeholders, you often don't realize the things that are going to trip you up down the line. So getting out into the company and really figuring out what are the implications of this strategic change that we're trying to make and how are we going to mitigate the risks and capitalize on the opportunities.
Now, in that capacity, are you doing a lot of work here in the Atlanta area, or is it really nationally?
We do work nationally, but because it's easier to focus our marketing on Atlanta, we do a lot of work with Atlanta companies, and we've been lucky enough to work with some of Atlanta's leading companies like Coca-Cola and Home Depot, Delta Airlines, Cox Communications, UPS, so... We've really had quite a great ride over the last 12 or 14 years.
Well, it sounds like you guys really get in deep with these companies, and you're actually getting hands-on with what's going on versus just talking to somebody on the phone. Is that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We spend a lot of time with our clients, a lot of FaceTime, and a lot of time at all different levels of the company. So one of the things that's really interesting to me is the fact that if you're an employee in a company, you kind of talk one level up and one level down, and you wouldn't feel comfortable going in and talking to the CEO about something that you're seeing out there in the market. And you also might not feel comfortable spending a day in the restaurant, right. You know, at, right. at the ground level.
Right.
But because we're outsiders, we can kind of fluctuate through all those levels and all those functions. And we're kind of equal to everybody.
Yeah.
We can have a comfortable conversation with the CEO, but we're also very curious about what the front line is thinking.
Yeah,
so,
like the undercover boss kind
yeah.
of thing. Right? That's great. So, Rob, partner in, I guess, two senses to Amanda, I guess.
That's
you
correct.
Guys. So, same last name. I'm guessing you guys are married.
That's right. All we right. are.
So, you get, how's working business together? How does that work? Does that work okay?
Well, luckily, we've known each other a long time, and
yeah.
we've figured out where we can help each other, and it's great. We don't really work together every day,
right?
But I wouldn't be surprised if once a week, you know, and once a month, we help each other immensely with a new project or a tough phase of a project.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we figured out a way to make it work pretty darn well.
So, how about a little bit of, on your background? I saw also in your bio that... that you also went to Harvard Business School. Is that where you guys met?
No, we didn't. We met before that
then.
At Kimberly
wow.
Clark. Yeah.
That's great.
And I share some things with Amanda. We both seem to love variety.
Yeah.
And so we're both very curious people. And I started out in engineering and with some leading companies like Procter & Gamble
yeah.
and Kimberly Clark. But I was always curious, you know, asking about, well, wouldn't this new product make sense? You know, what are the marketing people saying? So before I knew it, I was on some cross-functional teams helping launch new products. So over the years, I had the opportunity to work in manufacturing and engineering, designing stuff to be reliable and meet the quality, and marketing and sales. And I think they're all fascinating. And I guess, you know, now the last 14 years in consulting, I've sort of developed some niches like helping companies increase product line profitability. They find themselves with too many R&D products and so many products and customers. And I can go in and help them see, here's where you're making, you know, here's where you have fantastic competitive advantage.
Right.
You know, let's build that. You know, here's where we're just on par. You know, should we shed some of the weaker end of the product line or can we fix some of these problems? Also pricing. There's so many different ways to price in today's world. And companies tend to just do it the way they've been doing it. And that often leads to price wars or losing market share or getting market share but making no profit.
Right.
And then also new product priorities. McKinsey recently did a study. you know, companies are investing in mergers and acquisitions and entering new terrain like China, India, you know, Brazil. There's so many ways to try to grow the company, but they found that launching new products in existing markets is hugely more successful. The average return on those investments is bigger because that's your sweet spot. That's right. What they know. So I try to help companies do that in the most effective way.
Now, when you guys have new clients that you're working with, who usually is the person that you start as your point reference? Who would be somebody out there in the marketplace that said, you know what, I think I really need to go talk to these guys? What would they look like in a corporation?
It's often the president of a division, somebody with general management responsibility and who's very worried about being able to grow the business the way that they're expected to grow and the way they know that the potential is there. So that's the most typical point of contact. Sometime in a very big company, it can be the head of strategy. It could be the head of strategic marketing or marketing. But division presidents is common, CEOs if it's a mid-sized company.
So pretty much the top of the triangle there that's working towards getting strategic planning started and then figured out.
That's where it all comes together.
Well, that's great. So our next guest is Jenny Rodriguez, and Jenny is in strategic implementation is some of the thing that she focuses on. But I'll let her tell you a little bit more about that. Jenny, maybe you can give us a little bit of background on you.
Okay, thanks, John. So my area of expertise is I move organizations through significant transition. So an organization has a plan to move from where they are today to where they want to be tomorrow. And I work with the organization to help them build the roadmap and to put into the organization the alignment of people, processes, and technology to those strategies to make it happen. So what I'm finding is my area of passion, if you will, is I really enjoy working with organizations to connect people and help to understand how we're going to change the way they work by capitalizing on their strengths and their passions in the organization. So to harvest out the inefficiencies for today to provide funding for growth for tomorrow. So my background is in business. I have both a bachelor's and a master's in business. And I kind of grew up in small companies working in mostly operations, but also alignment of operations to the customer-facing activities as well, and have kind of carried that throughout. So all of my work has been around this concept of aligning your people, process, and technologies to your strategies. And I say that because so often companies will build a new strategy, but may not necessarily build that mapping. And that's where people like Amanda and Rob and I come in, is to help build that out. I went from small companies. I spent some time with General Electric, so learned sort of the processes, you will, around Six Sigma and those kinds of tools that help you to put substance behind your process change. Also spent some years here in Atlanta with Coca-Cola Enterprises, again, helping them to be successful in how they look at their transformational at work and moving that forward so you get to get results.
And again, kind of similar situation, a corporation or somebody looking to bring you in, what would that person look like that was bringing you in?
Again, much like Rob and Amanda, it's going to be the decision maker, the person who has on their strategic initiatives to make sure that they are changing. So when you think about running the business versus growing the business, there's a gap between the two. And so it's the individual who's charged with making sure that gap is closed. And that's going to be the person fairly high up, whether it's a division president, a CEO, a head of strategy, could be someone who's head of significant transformational projects as well.
Now, I understand that that you had a small international trip that you were supposed to be going on. You rescheduled the whole thing just to come on the radio show.
I did.
That's so nice of you.
I know.
Gosh, thanks, Jen.
My pocketbook loves it, too.
All right. So, obviously, a lot of knowledge here in the room. And I think interesting to have the strategy side of the coin and then the implementation side of the coin. So let's walk through a scenario, and this is kind of for all you guys, where I'm a corporation or an organization that is trying to figure out what the strategy is going to be going forward. What do you find first in creating the strategy that tends to be the process that helps me figure out what should the strategy be. What do you guys do in going through that process?
Well, one of the first things we do is just to clarify what the question really is. So the more we can be specific there, the better you usually get results. And so if we can pinpoint that there's a certain market or a certain product area that we should really be focused on, that helps a lot. There's two or three other components that we almost always include. One is customer feedback, which is obviously very important. Sometimes customers don't know what they really need, but they at least have a perspective on how things are going now and where their pain points are and how they could really make a difference in that business. And the more you can go downstream, for instance, not just talk to your customers, but talk to your customers' customers and really understand the economics of the value that you're adding, the better off you'll be. So customer discussions, analysis, and things like that are always part of it. The other thing that's always part of it is competitive analysis. So what else is out there that can solve the problem that we're setting out to solve? And how well are those competitors doing at meeting customer needs, at creating true value for customers, and things like that? The other thing that we always look at is what are the capabilities of the company. So you don't always have to have all the capabilities to get where you ultimately want to go, but you do want to kind of have an inventory of what your capabilities and strengths are so that you know what you have to build on and you can figure out what's the future state you're trying to get there to and how might you get from here to there.
Mm-hmm. Rob, any additions to that?
Well, I think we often get involved when a company thinks their existing strategy isn't working or they need a big change. Mm-hmm. And there's often some division inside the company. I'd back up a little bit and say, I think a good strategy has to be arguable. It has to make you very different than the competition. There's a big tendency. A lot of these great leading companies are always watching their main competitor and saying, oh, they did this. We better launch that. You know, we better speed up this program. And you know, often they're correct in thinking that, except they don't want to start to look like the competitor and have the same capabilities chasing the same target markets with the same product line. That's a recipe for price competition and commodity.
Right.
So often we get involved saying, you know, here's what you've been good at. You know, what has changed? What are the key facts? And interviewing customers, as Amanda said, and sometimes the distribution channel can offer great insight. Clarifying the alternatives, strategic alternatives, and then working with a variety of levels in the organization and functions to figure out these are the key alternatives. Let's make a decision and implement swiftly.
So you mentioned something interesting there is you don't want to look exactly like your competition, but you also, it gets kind of scary when you're way outside the box. You know, like, what am I, right?
Exactly.
Are you a widget maker or are you doing something completely different? So that line must be very difficult to define.
Well, you know, and it's less scary if you have more facts on the table. Mm-hmm. and an outside perspective really helps with that.
Right, yeah.
You know, saying, here's what you're really, really good at. Often they kind of look at us like, are you sure? You know, we say, yeah, we're positive.
Yeah.
Look at the profit in those products and those markets.
Right.
That's where you're outstanding.
Yeah.
Let's build on that edge that you've currently got and make it bigger.
So how, Amanda, do you get accurate, correct, and appropriate feedback? You go to the customers, right? And you're trying to talk to the customers directly. Are you using evaluations? Are you doing interviews? How have you found to gather that information?
Interviews work very, very well. You have a script and you have some questions you want to ask, but each customer knows something different very, very well. And so you have to be flexible to figure out what is it that customer knows that's going to help me figure this problem out and help my client. And, you know, often you want to go to those customers who are using your product or service in a very different new way that's creating more value. That can be an incredible way to get insight into what direction you want to go. The other thing, I mean, you can also just, there's tons of data out there now, right? And so people are writing reviews and they're contributing to tech support forums. And, you know, there's just so much more data than there used to be that's out there that you can harvest to understand what customers are thinking. But I wanted to get back to this idea of differentiation for an instant.
Sure.
Because I think it's really fascinating, the idea of doing something very different than competitors. And one of the examples that I like the best is IKEA. So for many decades, you know, the thought of a furniture store was very high-touch sales force, you know, a very involved process with the customer. They would bring it to your house. It would take 12 weeks to get, and you could pick any fabric you wanted. And, you know, so there was a formula that was there embedded in the furniture business for many years. And IKEA came up with a completely different concept. They took away value. So they took things away from the customer. We don't even assemble the product for you. You have to assemble this product yourself. We don't deliver it. You got to take it home yourself. We don't have much of a customer service or sales force in the store. You got to walk around and figure it out yourself.
Right.
But we give you a tape measure and a piece of paper that you can draw your room on. And so they shifted all of that work onto the customer. And there's some fascinating research in the Journal of Psychology that said that they did a test where they looked at people who had assembled their IKEA furniture versus people who hadn't. People who had assembled it actually liked the furniture more and were willing to pay more, which is just so counterintuitive.
Doesn't make any sense.
So getting the customer more involved and thinking about how you can differentiate what you want to add more to and what you want to take away. And by taking away elements of that value proposition and changing things around, IKEA is able to keep costs incredibly low. The other thing that they did was shift from a furniture is something that you want to keep forever, for generations. You know, it's the timeless thing that's going to be in your house. And IKEA's concept is it's almost like disposable, like right. It's a fashion accessory.
Right.
So they make it very cheap, and they expect you to repurchase on a fairly frequent basis. Really different concept.
Yeah. And stepping out like that must, again, be a little intimidating because it's like feast or famine. You're either going to knock the cover off the ball or you're going to be in trouble.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Scary.
All right, so now we have the strategy, and we've thought through it. We've talked to the customers, and we've talked to the people that are in the know, and we think we have a real good strategy, at least on paper. And now we need to implement it, right, Jenny? So what are some of the critical things that go into taking that strategy and effectively implementing it?
So I'm going to link it back to what Amanda was saying about when you're building out your strategy, and she talked about the three C's, right? You know, so the customer feedback, the competitive analysis you need to do, and then the capabilities. So the capabilities is the piece that when you really start to then take it from plan to action is where you focus your effort. It's around what are our internal capabilities, what are our people capabilities, what do we need to stop doing today in order to start doing something different tomorrow. So part of the roadmap is not only building out capabilities to do something new, because that's fun, right? Everybody loves to be part of the new product team or the new market team because you get new funding, it's fun, you get to create, you get to build. But nobody likes to stop working on mature processes or
right.
mature products because you're in a retrenchment mode.
Yep.
So getting the organization's capabilities centered around, that's not a once and done. That's something they should be doing on a regular basis, is part of the challenge. And part of one of the key deliverables that I focus on is, you know, your capabilities, you have to work in tandem. You can't, it's not just one or the other. You need both capabilities to keep what you're doing today efficient and be effective as you transition to tomorrow. You know, there's programs like Six Sigma and Lean get a very bad reputation out in the marketplace because they're perceived to be, I'll call it, cost out activities,
right?
But the reality of it is that any process or market becomes mature. It's just part of the life cycle. And when product or processes are brand new, there's lots of time, lots of attention, lots of money put into it. As they become stable and even mature, less attention is paid to it, but you don't necessarily keep it as finely honed and tight as it should be. So then all of a sudden you come to a period where your new products, the margin's not where you need it to be, so you're looking to now cut costs, and you immediately go back to your old mature processes because they've become complacent.
Right.
And there's money to be harvested there. And so part of what I focus on is as you're looking about implementing change, it's around, yes, we want to understand how to build the new change, but we also need to understand how we unbuild the old change or the old activities and align those more effectively.
Isn't the culmination of a lot of this stuff ends up being timing, isn't it? Because the life cycle of a product or a business tends to be a certain amount of time, or how long that business stays with either their old hat or what may now be antiquated systems. That creative destruction process that goes through with what we found to see in healthy companies is a very difficult thing to do, as Jenny, you pointed out, because you're constantly going back to your cash cow and saying, look, I don't want to mess this thing up. But from a growth perspective, you kind of have to, don't you? Mm-hmm. So how do you do that in this least destructive way, where it can be a smooth process, but it's happening all the time? Is it culture? I mean, how does that work?
So culture is a huge part of it. And how the organization adapts to change, and how they view change. As you know, in some organizations, change is perceived to be negative rather than positive. But it's also in how disciplined the organization is about implementing change and aligning to new strategies. I think that discipline of creative destruction, or the discipline of constant change, is one that's very difficult, and that what separates the good from the less successful organizations. I mean, I would ask Amanda and Rob from their perspective as well.
Yeah. I think discipline is critical, and one of the things that's so simple about discipline is just stay on task. You know, sometimes just coaching a CEO on the 5 questions that he or she should ask every time he talks to Mary, who runs customer service, the 5 questions he should ask every time he talks to Joe, who runs the plant, the 5 questions he should ask every time he talks to Sally, who runs finance. Just staying on task of what was it that we said we were going to do? What progress have we made? Are we on track or off track? If we're off track, what are we doing to get back on? Is there new information that we didn't know about before that would merit a change in plans? Just remembering to ask those questions in a consistent way is hugely valuable. The other thing that we advise clients on is rewarding small improvements. So if you're training an animal, you reward them when they make any small deviation toward the direction that you want to go. And the same thing works with businesses, because it's really hard to change, and things get worse before they get better. Employees hit roadblocks, they make mistakes, all of that is going to happen. So when you see a small change in the right direction, reward it. And discipline around those rewards is really important. They don't have to be big rewards. What I say is plan some time every Friday, you know, at 11 o'clock, to recognize a team for something that they did that was right. This could just be something that your administrative assistant puts on your calendar, and, you know, she knows or he knows on Thursday that they're going to go out and find a team that did something right. Tell you who it is. And so you stop by their cubicle and you say, hey, I heard about that thing that you guys did. That's incredible. I even got some feedback from the customer. They were really excited about the new direction that we're going. So just reinforcing those things that are going right makes a ton of difference. And those stories get around, and people start feeling like, oh, it's not quite as hard as I thought it was. I'm making some progress. I feel better about the new direction. And you've really got to have discipline around that. I think Jenny was just right on. Discipline sounds hard, but it can be fun too. It can be a matter of just remembering to do a few things right.
Well, it sounds so simple, right? It sounds, you know, you just keep consistent with a few areas that you do on a regular basis and just always do it. But as certainly creatures of habit, it's easy to fall out of that. You might create a habit with it, and then one day you don't do it, and then the next day you don't do it, and the next month you don't do it. Next thing you know, it's off your habit, and it's very hard to get that back in.
Right. Yeah.
So go ahead, Rob.
Well, one of the things Jenny got me thinking there, there might be 3 forms of doing strategy well, at least. I mean, one is if you're implementing your strategy effectively, you've chosen an area where you think you have big competitive advantage, and you're working to build it, and your people are being efficient, they're learning new tools of the trade all the time. They're getting best practices, getting better and better. But it's mostly like pedaling fast and keeping their, you know, their focus on their work. The operations execution, they're doing fantastic implementing the current strategy. Then the second phase is all companies are needing to adjust their strategy. The competitors change, the customers change, technology's changing rapidly. So are they good every year at figuring out, geez, what are the, how do we need to change? You know, this used to be what we did in this case.
Right.
Now we need a new process, or we've got to adjust it. And so as Jenny hinted, today in a leading company, every manager has to be good at that continuous change. You know, 50 years ago, I think they really locked in processes, like hardwired them.
Right.
You know, we're the best, just keep doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That's no longer the case. Yeah. So the second thing is continuous change that even affects the strategy a little bit. And then the third case is when you need a big change. There can be a big shock in technology or markets or customers, or I think what we think we see a lot is companies that didn't, they put off a big change for a number of years. Now they really need a big change.
Yeah.
And often we can help with that. A third party really helps when you need a big change. And what I'm kind of struggling with internally is maybe if the company has a person like Jenny and this role of strategy execution built in, maybe they can avoid that big sudden emergency and calling a third party.
Do you have any examples of a big emergency, something like that, that you've experienced? You don't have to name names.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've got several in mind. Well, one was where a CEO really had a vision that they needed to be a one-stop shop in a building material industry. And they had a lot of middle managers that weren't sold on that strategy. But they were preaching it as fact to the investment community and to employees. And so it's sometimes you see a place where there's disagreement in a company, but you've gotten past the debate stage. So the CEO or the top executives are witnessing slow execution.
Right.
Well, it's because the organization's not sold on
right.
what's being explained to the market and investors. So in that case, it's very helpful for us to come in and define the problem, interview internal and external people, bring a lot of facts to the table, and bring this whole group that has some disagreement together to say, here's the facts we're seeing. Here's what the interviews say. It seems to us, could this be true? Could that be true? And we can help bring them back together around today's reality, define new alternatives from where they are today, what are their best options today, and they make a new decision and get back on track altogether.
And Jenny, you're shaking your head over there on the people not being behind the leader. Is that something that you've seen going through what you've done?
Yes. Well, I'm kind of smiling because, you know, I speak about process a lot, and process can be a very negative word to a lot of people because it means that they're supposed to be doing something in a way that they may or may not agree with. But Amanda spoke earlier about the reality of and the necessity of having that stakeholder analysis. So clearly in Rob's example, the executives weren't listening to their stakeholders. They didn't take that time in the beginning to do the appropriate change activity of saying, okay, we need to make sure that not everyone has to agree, but everyone has to be on board because this is the direction we're going in. And so when you miss that piece, it manifests itself in the streets hearing one thing, your investment community's hearing one thing, and the reality is there's a lot of dragging heels back at the ranch. And all that does, quite frankly, is just make everyone's job 10 times harder.
Mm-hmm. So let's shift gears for a second and actually go along a similar path, but a little bit different. And that is, you go in and you've obviously experienced organizations that have tried to do this and not done it well. What are some of the things that they do wrong, that they miss?
The biggest thing is not communicating well. So the CEO thinks that they have explained the direction, but they really haven't explained it clearly. They haven't explained the implications for each function and each level. They haven't stayed on message. So you really have to get a clear message and keep repeating it consistently and frequently in many different contexts, in many different ways, with many different examples, with a lot of reinforcement around things that are headed that new direction, the recognition and the reinforcement of the things that are going right. So communication is the biggest gap that we see. The other big gap is just getting attracted to a new shiny object and forgetting about the plan altogether. And that does happen a lot.
Rob, go ahead.
Another one that I see is, you know, executives are supposed to take risk. You know, there is a batting average of new products or new, you know, attempts to grow the business. So when do you give in? You know, so failure to acknowledge that something they're doing isn't working. And it ties in with what Jenny said, that to do new things, you got to free up resources and stop doing some things. So there's this continuous, what do you stop doing? When do you acknowledge you need to make a course change? And I think I see that being delayed in a number. So that's a common mistake, mm-hmm. is to delay that a few years.
Right.
And it uses up your money. It lets competitors get ahead of you. You know, it hurts in a few ways.
Right. Good stuff. Jenny, anything on that?
So I have two. So the first thing is there's a misalignment of metrics. So I'll go back to the statement earlier. You know, there's all executives have goals and deliverables to run the business. And their bonus, their performance measures are associated with that. When the grow the business activity is not aligned to their success measures, they're not going to focus on grow the business. It's that simple. It's the money. It's all about the money. At the end of the day, let's be honest, it's about results, both personal and for the organization. The other point I want to make is about the actual activity of doing the execution. So there are three levers you can pull: time, money, and resources. And so I'll share a little anecdotal story. I was doing an interview about a year ago, and I was interviewing to run a program business transformation office. And the gentleman said, I said, well, talk to me about the budget. Well, you don't have any money, was the response. And I said, okay, so talk to me about your team. Well, you don't have any resources, but it's okay because every project we present to the business, they say yes. I said, okay, so let me see if I understand this correctly. You have no money and you have no resources. How much time do you have to deliver? And he looked at me as if I was crazy. And I said, no, you don't get a choice. You have three levers. And if you have zero, zero, then the other one's infinite. It will never get there. And I actually put a fourth lever on the top of that, and that's decision rights. Many times in organizations, particularly when you get into larger organizations, they become stymied by the inability to make a decision to move that forward. And when I talk about decisions, when you're doing new strategies, it's a project, right? There's a process. There's toll gating or stage gating. And you get into the reality of the culture and the politics, and they can't drive forward on that decision. So the other three levers, if you will, become irrelevant.
So let's talk a little bit about that. And a lot of times great ideas do get stymied in the web of bureaucracy. How do you free that up? How do you get rid of that, the bureaucracy pulling things down that may be great creative ideas? Got no takers.
No, I'll start.
I got none.
I think, you know, Rob has said it a couple of times.
I stumped the panel.
He did. We're all like, okay, which one of us is going to start this one? I'll go back to what Rob was saying about the value of having an outside advisor / consultant. That's where someone who can come in and be able to, you know, call what they see, but call what they see in a very professional manner, that, you know, there's no vested interest on the part of the independent consultant to win one way or the other. So there's not a win-lose in that relationship. So that helps to drive that forward. I think what else also helps to break it, if you will, is if there's clear recognition from the very top of how the activity you're working on really does align to your overall strategic intent. Sometimes there's not a good communication about how that's aligning. So it feels like you're down in the trenches working away. And I don't want to do that because I have all my other trench activities I need to be focused on.
Right.
And I think just helping to pull that up and being a better job of aligning that and communicating that.
Well, John, you asked a very tough question. That's why you started to say, no, there's so many elements, culture. But it does remind me of one of my favorite topics, which is segmenting. If you're struggling to please a customer. I know a very leading Atlanta company that does a massive amount of constant customer research, how satisfied all the customers are. I mean, they're monitoring like hundreds of metrics constantly. But it's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily help the new product people in R&D enough, because it's not by segment. So it ends up being an average. Let's say they have a competitor that's better at certain types of service.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their monthly data is an average often of all the things they're best at, the things they're equal at, and the things they're bad at.
Right.
So if you can break your new product launch groups or initiatives into more a segment-based approach, where you separate out customers with different needs that value specific services and features differently than other segments,
mm-hmm.
and say, how big is this segment? How fast is it growing? You know, can we have the best capability? You don't have to already have the best capability for that segment, but you've got to be able to visualize that you can quickly have the best capability to serve that segment. You know, and look at the size just of that segment, and the market share, then set market share goals for that segment. I think this reduces fear, reduces risk, builds certainty. So I love segmenting. And I don't mean like segmenting by customer size or customer location. Really talking about the customers with certain needs that will pay a certain amount for certain features and service.
Well, let me roll this question back for you guys one step, because we're talking about the bureaucracy and the decision-making process. I mean, I would think that the number one place you're going to run into that hurdle is just how you guys go to market. How do you even get in the door? If they've got all this bureaucracy and inability to make decisions, how do you even get them to open up to the idea that they need to bring somebody in, third party, that can listen to it and help them sort through all this? So how do you guys go to market, and what challenges do you hit in getting businesses to raise their hand and say, yes, we need help?
One of the things that we find most effective is just to notice what's going on out there. So if you've got a certain target client, let's say, go shop in their store, go eat at their restaurant, look at what the investors are saying, watch what new products they have coming out. Watch how people are using their products. Watch how people are using their competitors' products. And when you get a meeting with the CEO, bring them some of that outside reflection and kind of just things that you've noticed that are going on out there. And it's kind of like, whoa, you know, I knew that was, they're saying, I knew that was going on, but I really hadn't thought about the implications. So if we notice things that are going on in the market for a certain company and come to them and say, have you thought about this? And have you thought about a couple of different alternatives that you could perhaps use to address this issue? And I've thought about it a little bit, and here they are, 1, 2, and 3. Which one, you know, are you going after? It's often just so thought-provoking that they think, geez, maybe we do need to be looking at that. Maybe you could help us take a look at that and tap into the brains and eyes and ears that we have in our organization to just focus on that one issue for a few weeks and figure out, what are we going to do about it? Is it an opportunity that we need to act on? And if so, what do we need to do as a next first step?
When you are working with a clientele, brand new organization or corporation, what tends to be the first step in identifying, A, what the issues might be? You talked about the interviewing and the discussions with the high-level people. But if they're interested in coming in and talking to you or having you come in, what's that like? How does that work?
Well, most companies are very, very interested in growth. So identifying what the potential growth opportunities is often a very, you know, ripe and very interesting area for them. So sometimes we'll say growth is created by change. Here's the changes that are going on. And changes tend to fall in one of a few areas. One is technology changes. So something that you couldn't do before, now you can do, or something that you couldn't do cost effectively before, now you can do very, very cost effectively. I mean, there's so much going on with right now in terms of the ability to get data, to store data, to the ability to get customers involved, to shift work onto customers, to get customers involved in things like product development and tech support and all kinds of stuff. The other area of change is customer needs, cultural changes, societal changes, et cetera. And the final change, or another form of change, is what form of employees are available to you, and you know, how you can use the employees in a new and effective way. So we're often looking at what's going on in the market, what opportunities might you have because of that, and what could those growth opportunities be. So that's the most typical way to kind of zero in on where the opportunities are to help them.
Okay. Rob, anything on that?
Yeah, I think I'm surprised how many times we've been called in because I think a company's got a nagging issue and they feel a little bit stumped. Or, you know, one, say, head of a division will feel a little bit stumped. Like, why isn't this getting implemented? Or I think we're missing something. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, gosh, we're supposed to have figured that out by now. And we can come in and get, you know, our ability to work at multiple levels and work, talk to customers and be totally unbiased going in, we can very quickly bring the group together to, you know, make a decision and get going in a new direction.
Jenny, anything on your experience?
So my experience has been, I think oftentimes we're brought in initially to solve a particular problem in a particular area. But the value that we bring to the organization is our ability to see across the organization. And so our solutions are often much more cross-functional or cross-layered than it might otherwise be if you have just the individuals whose job it is to be immersed in a particular area. I think that then opens the door to the broader strategic questions around how do I get them to help me do the broader strategic issues. So brought in initially to solve a particular point problem, the solutions tend to be more cross-functioning and broader across the organization because that's the way we see. Mm-hmm. And that then leads to the broader discussion of how do we elevate this to the next level.
Okay. Good stuff. I had one other question around the businesses that you guys have and whether it's going in and working as an employee or working in a consulting role. But there are obviously, there's a lot of competition out there of people who do the same kind of things that you guys are doing. So first to Amanda and Rob, what sets you guys apart from competition, other consultants that are doing the same kind of thing?
Well, one thing is just the fact that we've been doing it seriously for a long time. So there's a lot of people who come and go from the market, but we've been doing it, you know, full time since 1998, very, very focused on helping customers. And I think the other thing is that we are quite efficient and we're very focused on getting results as quickly as possible. So we won't sell you a big project if you don't need a big project. So if we can come in and give you an answer in half an hour that's going to solve your problem, that's fine. You know, that's all you needed. So I think that's one differentiator. The other is the process that we use, you know, the very systematic and disciplined way of looking at the alternatives, deciding what facts are needed to make a decision, involving the right stakeholders, doing the quantitative analysis, getting competitor and customer information. That process and using it in a very systematic way while involving the employees very intimately, because what we found is that if the employees are involved in the whole fact-finding and analysis and decision-making process, they are ready to go when it's time to implement. I mean, they were the ones who developed it. Yeah. They understand the rationale. They've been thinking the whole time over a period of many weeks about how they're actually going to get it done and what their first steps are going to be and who they need to involve and how they're going to convince their subordinates that it's the way to go. So implementation can start much faster and much more effectively because of that process of involving the employees.
Good stuff. Rob, anything to add there?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's partly our breadth of experience and partly our personalities. You know, the breadth of experience, we've worked in manufacturing, we've worked in sales, we've worked in marketing and new products. You know, these pieces are different and they often take different kinds of people, but we're extremely curious people who love adventure. So we keep getting our, you know, stuck in all different things.
Spice of life kind of thing. You guys are all over.
But so in addition to being curious and creative, we're also sort of brutally logical and very practical. And we want to get there the shortest, cheapest way possible. We've done some crazy things in our life, like flown a small plane from Atlanta to all over Alaska. And so we've kind of
got... You actually flew it yourself?
Yes.
Well,
yeah,
there you go.
It's a little family enterprise, an old Cessna airplane.
And you all made it back safe, right?
We did.
So barely.
We're this funny combination of adventurers who are practical and logical as well. So, you know, whether it's defining the problem and listening to all the different perspectives in the company and then quickly boiling it down to either your problem is either A or B. It's obviously either A or B. Which is it, you know? And so within a week, we'll know. And then, you know, so what do we do from here? You know, I see two alternatives. Let's go. Who should we talk to? So combination of the creativity and the very practical, we like to have a big impact pretty darn fast, often within a month.
All right. Jenny, how about you?
I think for me, it's, you know, I work a lot as an employee as opposed to an outside advisor. And I think the success depends on your passion. So if you're passionate about what you're trying to put into place for the organization, I'm passionate about change. I'm passionate about the impact of change on people and how they work tomorrow as opposed to how they're working today. And so that is what is my reputation staked on, is the passion around ensuring that change is a given, right? The only thing constant about change is change. But how we get people to do that change is what makes companies successful or not successful. Because at the end of the day, it's not machinery. It's people that make the difference for the companies.
Perfect. So in wrapping up today's session, I'll just ask each of you guys for your pearl of wisdom for our listeners. So who wants to start on that one? Amanda, you're first.
My pearl of wisdom is just to focus, stay on task, and keep communicating the same thing over and over, and don't assume that everyone else knows what's on your mind. So continually reinforcing the direction that you want to go, because people at all levels in the organization, they have to figure out exactly how they're going to do what they need to do that day to go the direction that you want to go. They have to make 1,000 tiny decisions every day. And if you can clarify your intent, where you want to go, where you want the company to be long term, they can make those right decisions along the way that you would never be able to advise them on because you don't understand their job. You don't know the details of their job. Yeah. But if they can understand where you want to go, they'll figure it out together. They'll collaborate well. They'll make decisions every day, every minute that are in the right direction.
All right. Thanks for that. Rob?
I can't help but have three.
Okay. there you go.
Okay. So the first one is know what you're good at. And be ready to keep, you know, revise that. You know, it can evolve. But be clear on what you're good at and help your people understand it so everybody's on the same page. What are we trying to be best at? Second is have some creative, out-of-the-box strategic thinkers in your company, in your division, in your group, and know who they are. And let them, you know, work on some quirky problems and have a batting average. Don't have all super strict implementers, because you really need the creative out-of-the-box thinkers there, you know, more often. With the shorter product life cycles, you need them there all the time now.
Yeah.
Right. And third is don't be afraid to ask for help. And that's from your boss, that's from other divisions, or it could be an outside resource if they can help you. So if you're out of capacity, if you're stumped, which is going to be unusual because you're a successful person, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help. I think some of the highest, most successful people I see seem to have that quality.
All right. Thank you. All right. Jenny.
Yeah. Okay. So mine is really a mantra I share with almost all of my teams. And because what I work on is change and forward thinking, mine is I always want them to be thinking how you can, not why you can't. So always getting that emphasis on the solution, not the problem.
Perfect. Sage advice. Thank you much. So maybe we could get contact information if somebody wants to reach out and contact you guys. Amanda, what would be the best way to get reach out to you guys?
I can be reached at amanda@satilli.com, S as in Sam, ETILI.com, or at 404-378-0400.
Okay, Rob?
And the website as well, satilli.com.
All right. And same number?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Jenny?
Okay.
So I can be reached at Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E dot Rodriguez at Comcast.net or 224-659-2257.
Okay. Thank you guys for your time. We really appreciate it. And for our listeners this week, we appreciate you tuning in. We will look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.